Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. Russia, Turkey, and Iran have agreed on a plan to support the partial Syrian ceasefire and to find a political solution to the six-year Syrian civil war. No details were immediately released as talks ended in Kazakhstan, but they say the sides will meet again next month in Geneva. Humanitarian agencies say they fear for the safety of Iraqi civilians in the western part of the embattled city of Mosul. Lisa Schlein reports.
The Iraqi government reportedly has regained full control of eastern Mosul 100 days after military operations to oust Islamic State fighters from the city began. The government is now setting its sights on recapturing the western part of the city, and this is causing worry among humanitarian workers. The United Nations reports nearly half of all casualties from Mosul are civilians. Lisa Schlein, Geneva.
Witnesses say at least seven policemen were killed in an explosion in Somalia Tuesday. The explosion occurred at a base used by units from the Somali police force in the town of Afgoye. The town's mayor says the bomb had been hidden by al-Shabaab militants who attacked the base Monday. The explosion followed an attack by the militants on Afgoye just hours earlier. The Trump administration is imposing a media blackout at the Environmental Protection Agency after imposing similar blackouts on the Agriculture and Interior departments. News agencies report that administration officials have told EPA staffers not to talk to reporters or publish any news releases or post anything on social media. The EPA has also been ordered to suspend offering grants and assignments to contractors, keeping an eye on water quality and other safety issues. This is VOA News. Britain's Supreme Court ruled 8-3 Tuesday that Parliament must approve plans to trigger the country's exit from the European Union. It says the ruling was based on the view that withdrawing from the EU would both cut off a source of British law and change rights enjoyed by British citizens. Prime Minister Theresa May's government had wanted her to be able to use executive powers to invoke the so-called Article 50 of the EU treaty, which would begin the withdrawal process. Andrew Blick teaches history at King's College in London.
The consequence of this judgment today is that the matter is now slightly out of her hands, in that now she has to get statutory authorisation, she has to take a bill through Parliament, she has to follow through those parliamentary procedures. It can be done quickly, but it does require both houses of Parliament to agree to it if she wants it to happen quickly.
Andrew Blick.
Ja, meine Damen und Herren, das Präsidium.
German Social Democrat Sigmar Gabriel said he will not challenge Chancellor Angela Merkel in a national election September 24th. Currently, Ms. Merkel's party holds a double-digit lead over the Social Democrats. Gabriel recommended former European Parliament President Martin Schulz to lead the SPD. President Donald Trump moved Tuesday to advance construction of two oil pipelines in the U.S. The action overturns the policies of former President Barack Obama, who objected to the projects on environmental grounds. Mr. Trump signed executive orders calling for new negotiations to allow construction of the Keystone XL pipeline.
We're going to renegotiate some of the terms, and if they'd like, we'll see if we can get that pipeline built. A lot of jobs, 28,000 jobs.
The president said he would make an appointment next week to the U.S. Supreme Court to fill the vacancy left last year by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia. Administration officials said Tuesday Mr. Trump will begin issuing executive orders regarding immigration on Wednesday. One of the things to be considered is a wall to be built along the southern U.S. border with Mexico. Later in the week, the new president is expected to announce restrictions on the flow of refugees into the United States. The State Department is said to be reviewing a last-minute decision by the Obama administration to send more than $200 million to the Palestinians. U.S. President Donald Trump's choice for Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services faced tough questioning Tuesday during a second round of confirmation hearings on Capitol Hill. Tom Price was testifying. Also on Tuesday, Nikki Haley was confirmed by the U.S. Senate to be the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. In Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gambia's parliament revokes former President Yahya Jammeh's state of emergency.
The parliament Tuesday unanimously agreed to revoke the state of emergency that was brought by the former president Yahya Jammeh to stay in power.
Let's view a string of Sydney Mariner in Dakar, Senegal. A busy African Union summit is ahead next week as the body prepares to choose a new leader. Zimbabwe widows are left homeless and penniless by their relatives. Malawi looks to expand a life-saving triage system for the sickest children. And Congo's opposition leader goes to Europe for medical treatment, but his party says no need to worry.
Mr. Tshisekedi came back to Congo on July 27th, and he left the country this morning to Belgium just to see his doctor. There is no issue for people to be concerned.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement. And officials in South Sudan's Imatong state educate mothers how to feed their babies to avert malnutrition cases. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. West African troops in the Gambian capital, Banjul, continue to prepare for the return of President Adamawa Barrow. Mr. Barrow, who won the December 1st election, is staying put in Dakar due to security concerns. VOA String of Sydney Mariner in the Senegalese capital says some officials of the new government are hinting that Mr. Barrow could return to the Gambia sometime this week. Meanwhile, the Gambian parliament, led by former President Yahya Jammeh's party, voted on Tuesday to revoke the state of emergency declared last week by Mr. Jammeh as a last-ditch effort to cling to power. Here's Sydney Mariner in the Senegalese capital, Dakar, for the latest on the Gambian crisis.
The parliament Tuesday unanimously agreed to revoke the state of emergency that was brought by the former president Yahya Jammeh to stay in power. Members of the parliament, whom most of them are the former party MPs, they control the parliament overwhelmingly, spoke that, you know, their hands were tied to an extent that they failed those who voted them in the office. But the minority leader, who is now part of the new government, said he abstained himself from the debate because it's treason for his fellow MPs to vote or even sit for such a bill in the parliament. But the majority leader of the former ruling party, APRC, still defended the parliament decision to introduce state of emergency, citing at a time that their security and sovereignty is being tested. But at the end, they resolved that the law is unjust and it must be immediately revoked. So there is nothing like state of emergency at the moment.
We know that the president picked a woman vice president. We understand there continues to be some controversy surrounding her selection. What can you tell us?
Yes, since President Adama Barrow appointed his vice president in the passing of Fatoumata Tambajang, there have been lots of controversies surrounding her appointment 24 hours after the president made his announcement. Lots of things comes up. Constitution was an issue in her appointment. According to the activists, her appointment is unconstitutional and it's in contravention of the 1997 Constitution of the Gambia, which, according to the eligibility of that post, the person must be less than 65 years. And they said Fatoumata Tambajang is 68 years old. So therefore, her appointment to the post of the vice president is unconstitutional and it must be rescinded. But the spokesperson for the coalition government addressed the press. He was asked on several times by the press, but he tend to defend her appointment, but in a sense that he is saying the president will make an official announcement on the matter today. So it's like Gambia is experiencing another democracy where citizens are now holding their governments to account through social media, which helped Barrow to come to power. But the spokesperson insisted that the appointment is in conformity.
So, Sydney, where are we in terms of President Adama Barrow's readiness to return to Banjul?
Adama Barrow is still in Dakar Senegal, and he is expected to return to Banjul either today or Friday. These are dates not confirmed officially by the coalition. So we are still looking whether Adama will return, because reports say he cannot return without security clearance, because the ECOWAS forces are still there trying to sanitize State House, which falls under their command now. So they are doing everything possible to guarantee Adama's security before his arrival. But he is expected in Banjul anytime soon, James.
Thank you very much, Tini. It's always nice to talk with you.
Thank you, too.
That's VOA's Stranger City Mariner speaking with us from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, a leading member of the main coalition of opposition parties known as the Rassemblement says Congolese should not worry about the health of veteran opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi. Mr. Tshisekedi, who is 84 years old, left Kinshasa Tuesday for medical treatment. He returned home last July after spending almost 2 years in Europe for medical treatment. His return to Belgium comes as the Rassemblement and President Joseph Kabila's government are in the process of implementing a New Year's Eve agreement calls for a transitional government. Martin Fayulu, a member of the Rassemblement, says implementation of the agreement is progressing and that Congolese should not be concerned because Mr. Tshisekedi is only going for a scheduled medical checkup.
There is no concern because, that is an old man. He has to see his doctor from time to time. Mr. Tshisekedi came back to Congo July 27th, and he has spent more than 6 months here, and he left the country this morning to Belgium just for to see his doctor. There is no issue for people to be concerned.
As you said, Mr. Tshisekedi is an old man. He's 84 years old, but yet he's the spiritual leader of the main opposition and also the Rassemblement. What does his departure or his age and his health, would that impact the current negotiation and the agreement that the Rassemblement has signed with the government?
There is no impact on the current negotiations. Tshisekedi will be back in Congo. There is no problem for them. He was due to leave the country last week, but he was waiting for us to finish that ongoing discussion about the what we call in French arrangement particulier. Now, as we have delayed the discussion, he left, but he's coming back. This is not really a concern.
Has Mr. Chisekedi's health been deteriorating recently?
No, it's not deteriorating. I think there is video that people can watch that Chisekedi is well, but he doesn't have any problem at all. And as I'm telling you, he just went to Brussels to see his doctor. There is no other issue or major issue.
Mr. Fayulu, bring us up to date. Where are we in terms of implementing the agreement that was signed between the Rassemblement and the government?
We have put together a comprehensive program on Wednesday. What we'll do is some private meeting between the stakeholders to agree on the government. That's Wednesday morning. And in the afternoon, starting 4 p.m., we'll have a plenary session, all of us, to discuss about the government. And on a Thursday, we'll rerun again the chronogram. We will have the timetable for the whole operation regarding the accord. And on Friday, we'll have another plenary session. All members who signed the accord will meet to agree on the arrangement particulier. We have to adopt the adoption of the arrangement particulier. And on Saturday, we'll sign the paper. That's what we have agreed.
So would you say that implementation is on schedule?
Yeah, implementation on schedule, yeah. We have scheduled everything And this Saturday, we have to sign the what we call the particular arrangement, which is a part of the main accord.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from Kinshasa. Today is Wednesday, January 25th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14:15 past the hour. African heads of state have a lot on their plate for this year's African Union Summit, especially without a leader at the helm. African diplomats, foreign ministers, and heads of state are beginning to arrive at the Continental Body's headquarters in Ethiopia for the 28th summit. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
As African heads of state look at big issues across this continent this year's African Union Summit, they also need to make a big internal decision. They need a new leader. AU Commission Chairwoman Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma is on borrowed time after heads of state extended her term.
The hot issue is electing a new chairperson for the African Union Commission. It was postponed last year, and really heads of state can't wait another 6 months to get a consensus. That's top of the agenda.
Other issues include stopping the ethnic violence in South Sudan and rescuing the country's crumbling peace process. Also, the ongoing humanitarian crises and conflict in Somalia and the Lake Chad Basin. The continuing debate over the International Criminal Court is one area where the new AU chairperson could set the tone, especially as three African countries plan to leave the ICC.
There is very limited access to justice in Africa. If there's a particular president or a senior official who remains in office indefinitely, 20 years, 22 years in the case of Yahya Jammeh, where can those victims in those countries seek access to justice? The only place that you could potentially seek access to justice is from the International Criminal Court.
The political standoff in The Gambia is over. Jammeh has left. But Open Society campaigner Jegan Gray Johnson says that there is still unfinished business in the tiny West African nation, and he intends to push the AU to confront Jammeh's alleged crimes.
At some point in time, there has to be consequences for such actions and such attempts at entrenching impunity.
And on top of all of this, the AU must decide whether to allow this 54-member body to become 55. Morocco quit in 1984 after the AU recognized the independence of Western Sahara from Morocco.
The AU can do with a little help now that Libya, which used to be one of the biggest funders, is no longer supporting the AU. So in many ways, the AU could benefit from Morocco, but there are many countries who strongly feel that the Western Sahara issue is one of occupation. It needs to be independent.
It's an ambitious agenda for the 54-year-old organization and its leaders, who have just days to tackle these many issues. But as the AU has long said, this is about coming up with African solutions to African problems. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Opportunistic relatives in Zimbabwe routinely trample the property and inheritance rights of widows, and the government lets it happen, according to a new Human Rights Watch report. Sebastian Mofu has details from Harare.
The title of the 52-page report by Human Rights Watch says it all. You will get nothing. HRW researcher Bethany Brown says widows are routinely evicted from their homes and land, and their property is stolen by in-laws when their husbands die.
I spoke with widows across the country who told us the myriad ways in which this happened. Some were insulted, they were intimidated, they were threatened physically. In practice, protections right now are only available to widows in registered marriages. The most marriages in Zimbabwe are customary law unions. Our recommendations are that the government needs to make registration available for marriages of all types.
A registered marriage can be more expensive and difficult, and many Zimbabwe men prefer customary unions as they allow for polygamy. Zimbabwe Ministry of Women Affairs, Gender and Community Development official Ivan Dumba says efforts have been made to educate women about their rights.
In terms of this problem of property grabs, as a ministry, we categorize this as gender-based violence. Over the last year and slightly more than a year, we have established 5 one-stop centers for gender-based violence. The one-stop centers are essentially places where you have got comprehensive services. You would have the medical services, legal services, counseling services under one roof.
But former government minister Priscilla Misaira Bumushonga learned that enforcing your rights is not easy when she lost her husband.
I'm an activist. I had access to information. I had access to the best lawyer. I had access to the courts. At that particular time, I was a cabinet minister. And yet I woke up one morning, I had nothing. Absolutely nothing except a suitcase and the clothes that I had in when I walked out. As I looked at the report and saw that the theme was you will get nothing, I then thought, you know what, perhaps we should have added another thing. You will get nothing and you are nothing.
Widows say they can find themselves buried in grief and litigation. 53-year-old Maliaziwa Malunga explains. She says she was stuck in several court cases, and when she won one case, another relative would come. She says his brother came and he wanted the house she was living in. She says she lost sleep and her health deteriorated because of the stress. She says some relatives physically assaulted him. She was married under a customary union, leaving her with limited legal recourse. The government has not indicated whether it will make some form of registration available for all unions. But activists point out there is something a man can do to protect his wife in the event of his death. Make a will. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
It is no longer first-come, first-served at public hospitals in southern Malawi. 3 years ago, health workers began using a system designed by the World Health Organization to triage sick children using the three colors of traffic lights. Aslamek Masina reports from Blantyre. The results have been dramatic.
Patricia Hamza holds her daughter's hand as they walk into the Ndilande Health Center. The girl looks pale and weak. Hamza fears it is malaria. Her daughter has had a headache and been vomiting since last night. As usual, the pediatric waiting room is already full with mothers and their babies patiently waiting for medical attention. But Hamza is worried about the long wait. Her daughter is exhausted. Just minutes later, a medical worker arrives, assesses the child's condition, and gives her a yellow ruler. They jump the queue straight into the doctor's room. This is the Chipatala robot program. Specially trained health workers sort children on arrival using the colors of traffic lights. Red means emergency, and the child should be seen immediately. Priority cases are given yellow rulers so that they can jump the queue, while those with more minor complaints are assigned a green ruler, meaning they can wait. Ntisunge Muhango is the coordinator for the program.
A lot of children are being saved through this system because they are recognized early at the health facility, and even the referral that they are sending in the stabilized condition rather than before, whereby they could just send the children without stabilizing.
Health Aid in Tenderibanda works at Ndilante, one of 8 health centers using the system in southern Malawi.
Kuyambira nchaka chomwe tinayamba ndikuona kuti yatithandizira kwambiri.
She says children are no longer dying in line while waiting for treatment. She says she's not saying deaths have just been reduced. She's saying they have just stopped completely. Researchers at Malawi Liverpool Welcome Trust are studying the project, and officials are looking at expanding it to more hospitals. For Hamza, it turns out her daughter has pneumonia. She says they used to come to wait as early as 5 o'clock in the morning and not return home until 2 in the afternoon. But this system is very efficient. Just 20 minutes after they arrived at the health center, Hamza is in line to fill her daughter's prescription and head home. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Health officials in South Sudan's Imatong state are warning of a possible rise in malnutrition cases, but rather than wait for children to be admitted to therapeutic feeding centers, officials say they are starting a campaign to educate mothers about good feeding practices. Dimo Sylvia Arilio has the story from the Imatong state capital of Turit.
Victoria Ihisa, a mother of twins, holds her child as one cries outside a conference hall in the state capital Turit, where health officials are training dozens of female nutrition volunteers who will educate others on how to fight the rising malnutrition index in the greater eastern Equatoria state. Ihisa, who has 7 other children, says in Arabic that she came to the training to learn how to properly feed her twins and ensure they don't become malnourished like other children in her community.
Bringing up twins is very difficult, and if you don't have patience, you will not manage. So I think with the training, I will be able to take good care of them.
A 3-month-long survey conducted by the Imatong State Health Ministry and NGOs like Save the Children realized there is a significant rise in the number of malnourished children in the 4 counties of Lafon, Budi, Turit, and Ikwoto. Antasia Sebastian, acting director for nutrition in the State Health Ministry, calls the malnutrition critical in some states.
This training is for how to care about the baby, because malnutrition always, it will start earlier when the child was delivering. If there's no proper care, the child automatically will lead to malnutrition.
Many mothers say although they would like to see their babies grow up healthy, they cannot provide the required dietary needs of the children and often resort to non-nutritious diets, which harms the baby's health. Aya Joyce, a mother of 4 who is attending the malnutrition training, says having a healthy baby is a matter of pride, not only for the family, but for the community.
I feel very proud if I can see my child is moving, laughing while he's healthy. So I feel proud about it. And I need to help my neighbors and a community at large. At least we should fight malnourished, because we know with malnourished can damage the mind of the children.
That's reporter Dimo Silva Arelo reporting from the Imatong State capital of Turit. And that's it for this Wednesday, January 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington saying have a lovely day, Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 1730 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dee, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.